Good morning, y'all.
Well, I'm riding along, singing the same old cowboy song.
Roused you out soft and easy here this Saturday morning at Rosie on the House.
Ain't got nothing.
It'll be another beautiful, nearly perfect Arizona Saturday.
Woo! Nearly perfect? What are you missing?
Just for my liking, it's about 10 degrees too warm.
Oh, yeah.
But nearly perfect. First day of spring is when? Tomorrow?
21st. Right? March 21st?
We have got a packed show for y'all this morning. Thanks for getting up with Rosie on the House. I'm Rosie. Romy, my son and co-host, is here in the workstation right beside me. Miss Jennifer is absent today. She's actually in Los Angeles with our baby Carol Grace at the National Palm and Cheer Competition. We've got Mike Reish, our broadcast engineer, fully engaged with all the buttons and the lights and the gauges and the dials. Right, Mike? He's got them all. So we're here with a special guest that we've had in before, and every time we have him in, we get a ton of tremendous feedback. We are celebrating the 50th anniversary of the National Historic Preservation Act. So I've invited Dr. David Dean, professor of history from Grand Canyon University, to come in and visit with us about the history of the Historic Preservation Act.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Good morning. So, the Preservation Act. Where did this get started?
Okay, so the National Historic Preservation Act comes around in the 1960s as a kind of a post-World War II initiative. After all, the 1950s, of course, saw unprecedented highway building and housing projects and federal investment in our cities and particularly rebuilding our inner cities and those kind of things. And they were making sweeping wipeouts of old neighborhoods and old buildings and whatnot. And a grassroots movement really worked hard to raise their hands and say, well, wait a minute, we're actually losing an important part of our history through buildings, through these neighborhoods, through these districts and things. And so Congress agreed and said that, you know, these changes and stuff, we need to be careful and considerate to these old historic places. And so they put together the National Historic Preservation Act of 1966.
It's interesting. One of the first neighborhoods it applied to, one of the first neighborhoods that this ever got started in, was actually down in New Orleans.
Right. Of course, that was long before the National Historic Preservation Act in the French Quarter there, as the grassroots movements in that neighborhood recognized that, again, their history told through their buildings and their places is important to their community. Mount Vernon would have been a house that the little old ladies kind of saved because it was in deterioration. But all of these movements were hit and miss between the 1830s and 1966. And it took this final federal act to kind of put forward a comprehensive plan, so to speak, for how we treat historic properties across our country.
Mm. You know, we did an assessment of all the homes we've remodeled in the last 25 years here in the Valley and in the state as well. The two oldest buildings I've ever worked on were a home at 3rd and Birch in Flagstaff, and that home was about 80 years old. Beautiful old home with some beautiful woodwork, and an adobe resort in Paradise Valley. But other than that, the average age home that we remodel is about 9 years old.
9 years old.
Nine years old. Now, I've got friends in Boston, a good friend of mine, Ipswich, Massachusetts, just finished converting a 3,000-square-foot, 240-year-old mortise and tenon barn into a guest house.
And they probably used good historic preservation practices to do that.
They did. He was telling me that actually, because the building was listed on the National Historic Register, you actually get some some leeway from current building codes of what you can, what you do and you don't have to abide by.
Yes, there's actually most cities will pass, in addition to their uniform building code, they'll pass a historic building code that allows some relief in terms of ADA compliance or bringing electrical up to certain codes. Usually they will apply the code, current and modern codes, to new work, but rehabilitation work and restoration work, they'll let you stay a little bit looser, a little bit more, as long as life and safety are still maintained.
Well, I don't think there's any question about what the value is of holding on to these older neighborhoods. Just seeing the stability, taking certain neighborhoods, the Sam Hughes down in Tucson and all of the Encanto and the Willow District and Coronado, all the historic neighborhoods, and the certifying as a neighborhood, and what that does for the stability and the revitalization of those neighborhoods is impressive. I mean, looking at those neighborhoods back in the 60s and 70s and looking at them today, they're different neighborhoods.
Well, and what's great about that is the Historic Preservation Act and all the things that go with it include some tax incentives, some reductions in property taxes, and which allows for their people, homeowners' tax money to go right back into their homes, lets them fixing them up. And, of course, the property values go up when they're doing that. And so we see historic properties, their value go up about 30% higher or faster than regular homes that are the same age that might be across the street in a non-district.
A lot of misconceptions about working on historic homes. Some people are under the impression you can't change anything.
Right, and that is a really strong misinterpretation of the things. They historic preservationists understand that we need to live in our buildings, we need to use them adaptively, we need to modernize them and things. And so they put out a lot of guidelines and a lot of support and help to give property owners guidelines to help them make good decisions about their homes so they can make those changes, but those changes are appropriate. Because we see property ownership is just a stewardship. You're going to own that property for 5, 10, 25, 50 years, but somebody else is going to own it after you. And so you want to be a good steward of that property, not just tear it down and do whatever you want with it.
Now, it's one thing being in these historic neighborhoods that have so much character. What's involved in just getting any structure onto the National Historic Register? How old does it have to be?
Okay, well, it's a kind of a formalized process. The building has to be at least 50 years old, and then it has to qualify based on its significance of one of four areas. If it's associated with an important person, like someone was born there, like a president or something, or Thomas Edison's workshops where he did great work. If it's associated with important events, like, for example, where a landmark court case happened, or in the case of property owners, maybe it tells the story, those neighborhoods tell stories of what it was like in the 1930s or the 1940s in Phoenix or in Tucson or whatnot. So historic events, maybe there's something significant about its architecture, like the David and Gladys Wright House over in Phoenix, or if it's just an opportunity to yield some information. And then there's an aspects of integrity, which we kind of call the seven sisters, so to speak. And those seven sisters are its location, its design, the settings, the materials, the workmanship, the feeling. Those things that when you're around that building, when you're interacting with it, you feel like, aha, I'm at a different time and place. And if it gives you that feeling and whatnot, then it's got that integrity. And so 50 years old, one of those four criteria of association, and then integrity, you can get your property listed by filling out forms and going through your local designation process.
And that's dealing with local folks, or is that dealing with, on a federal level?
Well, what happens is the federal government and the National Preservation Act says this is really a community thing. So it actually sets up a relationship with each state, where each state then works with each local community to basically bring forward those properties. And so local planners, local city officials handle the process of designating those buildings. And then it moves forward to the state and goes on to the National Register through that process. But you start or initiate that at the local level.
I mean, in rural Arizona, I can think of, just off the top of my head, 15 or 20 ranch houses that would seemingly, to me, be perfect fits to be listed on the historic register.
Right, and if there's not a local government entity that would govern that in terms of zoning or something,
right.
It would be county or something, they could, a homeowner there could go straight to the State Historic Preservation Office, and they would help them fill out the forms and process that towards that national listing.
Fantastic. We'll talk about that some more. If you wanted to consider placing your home in the National Historic Registry, but I also want to talk about some particularly interesting historic buildings throughout Arizona, mm-hmm. things that buildings everyone will know, and a little bit of backstory on all of them.
Sure.
When we get back with Dr. David Dean, professor of history at Grand Canyon University, talking about the National Historic Preservation Act and what it means in saving the properties in, about, and around all buildings you're familiar with.
Are we going to open it up for callers if someone sure. lives in
absolutely.
A historic home?
Yeah. Any questions?
Question?
Absolutely. Join the conversation.
Put the doctor to the test. No, I'm just kidding.
Put me on the spot.
1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE4U or text 411-923.